This is a production of Cornell University.
Student Assembly Meeting, September 16th, 2010.
Ready for the microphones or not? Okay.
The time is 4:46. The SA meeting has come to order. Please call the roll.
Excuse me.
Here.
Here.
Excuse for now.
Here.
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 Yes.
All right, moving on to approval of the minutes. We have minutes from September 9th, 2010. Do we have any amendments or motions on the minutes?
Motion to approve.
We have a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
All for acclamation. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, the minutes are approved. Open microphone time now, so if we have anybody in the room who would like to make a comment, yes, Trustee Craig.
So I know a lot of you guys, especially all of you on Facebook, have got an announcement invite to the upcoming parade next Saturday. You guys are not only, I know that the student assembly had a banner and walk last year, again, you guys are leading for doing that, that would be great. But addition to spread the word, efficiency, positive form, fraternity clubs and whatnot, to have an awesome get involved, something great for Cornell spirit, and to show our community and our strength as a community. So the more that you guys can spend around the month and whatnot, the more we can.
Thank you for that announcement, and please keep that in mind. The annual Big Red Cornell Parade for during homecoming is coming up. It is this Saturday, right, Trustee Craig?
Next Saturday.
It's next Saturday, so please do keep that in mind. And now, is there anybody else who would like to make a comment on something that is not currently on the agenda? If so, please come to the microphone. Okay. Seeing that there is nobody else to make a comment, the open microphone session is ended. Moving on to announcements and reports. We'll start with Residential Life Committee update by Ulysses Smith.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Smith. We are now going to dispense with the orders today and just go move to announcement reports number 3. Associate Dean of Students for Fraternity Sorority Affairs, Travis Apgar. Please step up to the mic. So first off, thank you very much for joining us today. I know that the executive board has met with you just privately in a smaller discussion, but we wanted to have this discussion with the rest of the assembly, for those in the audience. And so if you'd just like to give a brief introduction about the changes to the university recognition policy, and then we'll open it up for questions. As well, if anybody in the audience would like to ask a question, we'll have our parliamentarian collect your name, and on every third speaker, we'll recognize any members of the audience. So, go ahead. Thank you.
Not going to zap me if I say the wrong thing, right? Okay. So two are really the pieces I think that most people are concerned the most about. One is pretty straightforward and simple, that hazing in any form cannot be tolerated at any point in a person's experience as a member of fraternity or sorority. And the reason it's worded in that way is because people often have a misperception that hazing only happens when you're joining the organization, when you're, you know, a pledge or an associate member or during the intake process. And the reality is that hazing can occur during recruitment or rush. Hazing can occur after you've been initiated and you're already a member. And we've seen examples of that over the past several years. And so we wanted to make sure that the university was very clear on its stance against hazing at any point in any form. Two is that alcohol and other drugs cannot be used in the recruitment, new member education, initiation, or intake of new members in fraternities and sororities. First, that aligns us with New York State law in the sense that there are very few people in any given year that join a fraternity or sorority as undergraduate members who are 21 years of age or older, and so it's against the law to serve them or allow them to consume alcohol as part of those processes. Second, as I said before, virtually all of the national organizations that exist here in different chapters have a policy against the use of alcohol or other drugs in recruitment, new member education, initiation, or intake. So we're aligning those policies so that we as a university are being very clear on our stance and helping the undergraduate self-governing body be able to move forward in addressing those problematic areas. The third piece is really us exploring, and so we haven't really been very clear about, or haven't decided upon, rather, the exact period of time, but looking at what is the appropriate period of time in any given semester that should be allotted for new member education activities or intake or initiation activities to occur so that the chapter has enough time to be able to do that effectively, but also so that it does not negatively impact the student's academic success in that semester. And so far, we've been looking at probably about an 8-week period of time that seems to capture enough time for most organizations that have a national organization's schedule to follow, giving them enough time yet not being unreasonable. So I hope that's enough info.
Thank you. So that?
Yeah, essentially, sure.
So, if we just go through, it seems like there are two main changes,
right,
with this policy. One is no freshmen
at open parties. So, that's a piece, and so I'm glad you brought that up, Andrew. I think that you have to, well, I hope that you will separate what we're putting before the Board of Trustees for consideration, which are these 3 points that I just talked about. Nothing more, nothing less. And then there's what the Tri-Council worked on through the end of the spring, rather, and through the summer as a draft proposed plan of implementation that talks about things like not allowing freshmen to be present at any fraternity parties where there's alcohol present, so on and so forth. Which is what negotiable? So, Andrew, you have to prove it. I don't know where you were reading things, but I want to be. I'm sorry. Okay. So let me be really clear. What the pieces that when and I've been quoted a couple times saying non-negotiable, and I realize it's not the most popular term to use, but here's what we're talking about when I'm referring to the pieces that are concrete. That we will put a statement in the recognition policy that says that alcohol and other drugs cannot be used in the recruitment, new member education, initiation, or intake of new members in fraternities and sororities. That's it. Number two bullet is that hazing cannot be tolerated in any form at any time in a person's experience in a fraternity or sorority. And the third piece is, which is still being negotiated, identifying what is the appropriate period of time allotted so that new member education or intake practices can occur without it negatively impacting a student's academic performance. The other piece is about freshmen being present at things, limiting mixers, all of those kinds of things. Are parts of what again was a draft proposal.
Okay, it's just a draft.
Yes.
You said a draft was like kind of a follow up to what Andrew was saying before. I think that there's kind of what we talked about in the meeting at the executive meeting and yourself and a couple of that a lot of students are really unclear about what parts are actually by the student leaders, what parts are, they don't take down negotiable items or anything that the three bullet points are the only parts that aren't. So, what parts of the current proposal came from the IIC implementation plan, came from the IIC board, and what parts came from the administration, and which parts can be specifically altered? Kind of, obviously, it starts talking about freshmen during recruitment, freshmen at mixers, at parties.
Sure. So I've listed 3 bullet points. Those are the pieces that we will move forward with as asking the Board of Trustees to make amendments to the recognition policy. How those things get implemented, the plan for how they are implemented, are completely under the control of the student leaders. And you have to understand that the Greek community being self-governing doesn't mean that there aren't other influences that are involved. I mean, there are generations of alumni who have great stake in this community, and they have a lot of input. And so you're asking me to say, well, which parts were written specifically by the IFC or by the Panhellenic? And I will tell you that that technically they probably were typed on their computer by people in those councils, but had a lot of influence from alumni and others who were involved in that process over the summer. But with that said, the tri-council officers and the tri-council leaders have have the ability to continue to work on that draft and come back with additional ideas that would be acceptable by all. So it's really, it has to be a cooperative process, I think.
Right. Just to pick out one specific, I don't know if it's not necessarily the most important, but at least important, that a lot of us at freshmen are very worried about, whether we'll be able to attend open Greek parties in, the fall of next year. Is that something specifically that can be changed by an ISB vote in theory?
Whether or not they can.
Whether or not freshmen are allowed or not allowed to attend open parties. Something like this is an example. Because a lot of students, that is one of the main concerns in their mind, as other things.
I'd love to be able to make this really easy, but unfortunately it's just not. Here's the thing. Fraternities in the first place are not supposed to have open parties. When they have open parties, they call them open parties or treat them as open parties, they expose themselves to incredible risk. What we know today on this campus to be an open party is a violation of a number of their national policies. Their general liability insurance that they pay thousands of dollars for year in and year out won't cover them if something goes wrong. Individuals in the organization, not just officers but others involved, expose themselves to criminal and certainly civil liability. So to answer your question, could they vote on it and make a decision that the freshmen can attend? Sure. I would urge them to think really hard about whether that's the best thing, though. So the bottom line is that this is about student safety, health, and well-being. In addition, it's about the student organization's safety, health, and well-being. So, we're charged with not just trying to provide the absolute best student experience for you all, but my office in particular is also charged with trying to provide the absolute best advice, guidance, advocacy for fraternities and sororities on our campus. And so this isn't about reducing our liability. To be quite honest with you, I don't know that that's ever been a part of this conversation, because the university's put itself in a very good place to avoid liability from a situation that happens at a fraternity or sorority. That's the reality. I'm pretty darn concerned about the liability of the members of those fraternities and sororities, though. I work with them every day. I know who they are. They know me. They certainly know all the folks in our office. And when one of them, has to appear in city court, we worry for them. When one of them is sued because of something happened in their organization and they're the officer, we're worried for them. And we don't want those things to have an impact on their future. So it's really about twofold. First and foremost, the individual student safety, health, and well-being. And second, the safety, health, and well-being of those organizations. We want to make sure that fraternities and sororities that have been here, you know, for 150 years nearly, we want them to be here for the next 150. The second piece, I think I understood, so correct me if I'm wrong, that you're seeing a disconnect between the mixers and parties and how that relates to new member education and possible hazing. Is that
parties to recruitment, mixers to new member
initiation intake? Yeah. So let me start with the mixers piece. Mixers, typically we're talking about mixers that happen in the spring semester after people have been given bids, they've become new members or pledges or associate members of their fraternities and sororities. Even before this whole amendment was thought about, you had the Panhellenic Council here working on a plan to change what their new member education process looks like and remove themselves from the mixers that happen several days out of each week during that 8 weeks in the spring where their initiation is supposed to be occurring. They recognize that while the sorority experience, the Panhellenic sorority experience is a good one, they recognize that it could be a lot better. That all of these organizations are based on certain values, founded on a mission, and oftentimes those things have gotten lost because we've kind of accepted this label as social fraternities and sororities, and we've really clung to that, and we've forgotten about what we were really founded for. And so in an attempt to try to instill some of that, that history and the values of what those organizations were really built upon, I think the Panhellenic was working to try to change what that 8-week process looks like, which currently involves a lot of mixers, not a lot of actual fraternity or sorority knowledge passed on from members to new members. So that was really more student-led, and I completely support and feel like it's something that is necessary if they're going to accomplish the goal of improving their new member education process. The recruitment piece that we're talking about in the fall, I assume, I would pose the question to you, because having worked here for, I'm going on my fifth year, I haven't seen too many fraternity recruitment events outside of parties. And I tend to think that recruitment and social events should be separated. It's interesting because, the conversations that I have, sometimes it's argued that, well, they're not always the same. And they're not always the same. That's true. Sometimes we have social events happening in the fraternity world that are not recruitment events. I'm yet to find a recruitment event that isn't social, however. And so it's problematic in the sense that we're essentially using open parties as unofficial recruitment events as opposed to doing other things that might recruit people to our fraternities, especially our fraternities, that demonstrate what our organizations really stand for and what we're really about without alcohol involved.
Thank you, Mr. Ackbar.
You're welcome.
First of all, you said about 5 minutes ago that one of the innovative factors behind the policy change was not to lessen the liability of the university department, but also to safety. However, that seems more counter to what Vicki Burgos said at the IOC 2 weeks ago. She also, of course, said
You know, I try not to speak on behalf of Vice President Murphy. She does a pretty good job on her own. All I can say is that a liability can be interpreted a lot of ways, right? I'm referring specifically to legal liability, you know, whether or not the university will be responsible financially to, you know, for damages or loss to a person or property or what have you. I might make the assumption that what Vice President Murphy was referring to is the fact that, you know, liability also exists in terms of, you know, that actual loss to our university, you know, the actual damage to our students. You know, those are things that are, you know, considerable risk in the current system. So I guess, you know, that's the best I could do to try to answer, you know, your question. What I could tell you is that in the conversations that I've been involved with, which I think I've probably been involved in almost all of the conversations around this issue, the topic of how do we reduce the university's liability because it's unacceptable now just hasn't been part of the conversation. Your second question about aligning our current policy with New York State law and national organizations and your interpretation of the fact that, you know, we're addressing first-year students at these events, but that we I guess then are not addressing, you know second-year or third-year students. I think that you're maybe making an assumption that the administration's saying that those things are okay. We're not necessarily saying that's okay at all. What we are saying, though, is that we know these policies exist, that your national organization is starting to enforce more and more, and that as a university, we feel compelled to be clear on our stance and align ourselves with that policy.
Thank you. People's questions are taking long time, so please make them a little shorter.
I'm just curious if there was an impetus to these discussions, if it were if it was a more singular event, or if it was actually sort of systemic problems that have to be sort of dealt with. And the reason that I ask that is because a lot of students on campus, whether they're Greek or not, are just wondering, you know, where are you, why.
Sure. First, I think that I'm getting a lot more credit than I deserve for this. I don't know that I'm the person. So you have to understand that folks like Vice President Murphy and Dean Hubble and so many others that have been here for many, many years and are members of the Greek community and alumni of Cornell and have been working towards this same kind of goal for a long time. Tri-Council leadership works very hard year in and year out, making policy changes, altering the way that enforcement occurs, and it tightens things up to some extent. But the reality is we continue to kind of address the symptoms of the issues. And while I don't know that this gets to the deep root of the problem, it gets a lot closer to that. So it's not necessarily that, you know, look, one thing happened recently and we just decided this is where we're going. That's not the case. This is years and years of work, and we feel like we're in a place today where this is the direction we need to go. Understand that this isn't just administrators like myself and Vice President Murphy and Dean Hubble that just got together one day and said this is a great idea. Know that I've had alumni, you know, before I even started the first day here, visiting me at the prior institution that I worked at, giving me a white paper they wrote asking that the university take a stance on these issues. Because it's very difficult to expect student leadership to stand up in a sea of their peers and take that kind of a stand. And so what we see is them struggle with that year after year. You know, look, about a year ago, the IFC voted one day of dry recruitment in rush week and then voted it out. It's a very difficult thing to ask them to make this kind of progress without the university being clear on our stance.
Thank you, Representative Brown.
Questions, thank you, Mr. Sure. Number one, I know this is a rare occurrence, but there are a few freshmen on campus who are 20 years old, and they did not use the internet.
So that really depends on how, you know, the plan for implementation is finalized, you know, what that looks like in the end. Okay.
And my second question, well, you can make the argument that a lot of the subsidy alcohol things, they can turn these and dorm, especially on campus, they're going out at the PDs and then kind of same meeting for, you know, non-alcoholic events and, you know, lack of parties that they put on by the unique in that way. So are you at all worried, is the administration at all worried that by not allowing freshmen to attend open
I think that we are we hear what the students are telling us loud and clear, that there will be you know, this displacement of students who are looking to consume alcohol if they're not allowed to go to fraternity parties. You know, that we've heard the concerns from students that it'll show up in College Town, it'll show up on North Campus, and you know, let's be really honest. I mean, we know that there's some drinking that happens in residence halls now. So sure, we're concerned. And we're also trying to work with students, with RAs, with other staff to figure out what are the ways that we can provide resources so that students can creatively figure out what are those alternatives that students would really be interested in. You know, when we were at the forum, we heard a student stand up and kind of detail his experience as a freshman and all the programs that were had. You know, there was this guy with a hawk on his shoulder, and there was some crayons, and we kind of colored. And it's interesting because, you know, some people kind of laughed at that. What's really interesting is, and you all may have had this experience, but I don't know. Those were successful programs. A lot of people attended those programs. A lot of students here at Cornell actually found those to be very entertaining. So, you know, while he was kind of poking fun at those are successful programs for one portion of this population. Certainly, the people who are driven to go to a fraternity party might not go to a fraternity party, might not choose not to drink that night because they're going to be able to color with crayons, but there must be something. And, you know, I will echo what the president kind of put in the Sun in his interview. You know, I don't know that you want a 60-year-old man or a 38-year-old man telling you how to spend your Fridays and Saturdays. We want to, as a university, provide resources to figure out what those programs look like, but we desperately need you all to help us actually plan the contents of those programs.
So just to follow up on that, we actually have a representative from the Security Board as a result of
I'm going to answer your question, but I also want to make a few points of clarification. So what's going to be proposed to the trustees is not necessarily the plan for implementation. I think that they're going to be very interested in hearing what some of those details are, to know that we've thought through and how it might look. But what's going to be proposed to the trustees is really just those three bullet points amending the recognition policy. And there's not, at least from my perspective, and of course, you know, there's many levels above me that can overrule Travis, so maybe you're right. There may be some room to change those three bullet points, but my understanding is that those will be concrete. In terms of the plan for implementation and where we can maybe find some middle ground, is that the best way to paraphrase what you're asking? I would hate to think that what we're talking about is truly separating new students from the fraternity and sorority community, that there is no interaction. I would like to think that students are creative enough to figure out how do you separate recruitment from social events with alcohol, or how do you create social events where new students can be there without alcohol and still be successful. And so, you know, I think that that's where we really need to see a lot of people comment and give ideas. And, you know, so far I've heard a whole lot of people tell me why it won't work, what the dangers of it are. But I haven't heard anybody really constructively think about what that might look like. And while Cornell is a very unique institution, you know, there are almost 1,000 campuses across this country that have fraternities and sororities on them, and many of them have this kind of a model, and they're able to make it work. So I'm positive that we can do it here if they can do it somewhere else.
I think that's one more question. So following up on that answer, has the university considered committing any resources, and what resources would those be, like helping the European authorities create alternative recruitment events, or even alternative, you know, nighttime social events that don't involve alcohol to replace, you know, what would arguably be a large part, what would many people consider to be a large part of the project? Are there any resources that you're willing to say will be committed to creating those alternatives?
My understanding is that there's a great deal of conversation being had right now regarding what those resources may look like and where they would be accessed. I think that perhaps Dean Hubble or Associate Dean and Director Joe Burke might be able to give you additional details on that. That's not something I'm intimately familiar with. From the fraternity side, in terms of creating alternative means for recruitment, you know, our office stands completely ready to help any organization that wants to kind of renovate their recruitment process.
All right, and the last question comes from the audience. Thank you, Mr. Pascal, for clarifying the difference between the amendments that proposing to work with these and the implementation plan. I think that was a good thing to do that. I think this is something that's important on the focus on the implementation plan. And one of the things I have heard about the implementation plan is addressing more questions having
sure. So this is a good example of where, as a self-governing community, they've already really done some great work around this area. I think it was maybe last fall when the IFC, and you'll have to forgive me if I'm wrong with my dates, but I think it was about a year ago when the IFC developed a three-tier process for how they determine kind of levels of seriousness for types of hazing and how the Greek Judicial Board would handle those types of hazing. And I think that what you'll see in the plan's implementation is that the MGLC and the Panhellenic have kind of followed suit in those regards, trying to identify, you know, what are the levels of seriousness and then what are the kinds of standard consequences for each organization based on the types of violations. Certainly, you know, the more egregious the violation, the more serious the consequence. In addition, we've had a lot of conversation around what's become somewhat this informal policy of this amnesty kind of idea, similar to medical amnesty protocol, you know, this hazing amnesty, where if an organization comes in and talks to either the tri-council or someone in the office about concerns they have in their organization about hazing and are committed to changing those practices, you know, we won't hold them responsible for what happened in the past. We'll help them rebuild their process, so long as they actually cut hazing out of it. And so far, we've actually had a few organizations that have taken us up on that and it seems to have worked pretty well. So I think that there are some very good examples there of the Tri-Council being productive in terms of addressing a really difficult issue. You're very welcome.
I'm Isaac Todd. I'm the Executive Chairman of the Peer Review Board and also a member of the University Hearing Interview Board.
I'm Chloe Gatta. I'm the Board Coordinator for Peer Review Board and also a member of the University Hearing and Review Board.
All right, thank you for coming today. So if you could just give, in the context of the proposed changes to the University Graduation Policy, if you could give one brief introduction to what you do at the Peer Review Board, and then as the Peer Review Board, how you feel the University Graduation Policy may affect your organization, and I know you may have brought statistics with you or whatnot, and if you did this, did or did this fine, but just any type of information on how, as the Peer Review Board and representatives of that body, you feel the changes will affect your organization.
Right. All right, so the Peer Review Board is a judicial branch run by students that hears house rules violations, predominantly North Campus. Most relevant to this hearing is the house rule on presence of alcohol and intoxication in alcohol, although not being consumed or possessed while in the residence hall. That would be a JA violation, so that's kind of where we separate. It's more of a presence issue. So in reality, a lot of times that is more along the lines of there's something happening in a room. We don't know who's drinking alcohol, but we know they're there with the party, and that's kind of where our jurisdiction lies. What our main concern would be, either positive or negatively, with this proposed new rule changes would be the influence that this has on bringing alcohol into or limiting the access to the dormitories on North Campus. So that's really what we're here to try to shed some light on and hopefully open up a dialogue and raise concerns and potential solutions for that. Generally, yes.
Yeah, do you have any influence on that strategy? And do your rulings that you pass down, do they get passed on to the administrator's
office? No. Although the decisions made by the peer review board are kept on record by the peer review board and are not passed on to the GA's office, we'll look at trends with the PRB, but all those decisions remain separate from students' permanent records and are maintained completely by the PRB. We do make recommendations for different house rules policies every year and changes to that, but we're completely separate from the JA, apart from referring cases back and forth depending on jurisdiction.
Thanks for coming. So I guess I have a question related to alcohol-related cases that the peer review board hears. First, do all alcohol-related offenses that occur in residence halls, let's just say, on dorm, although do you do it West Campus as well?
On a smaller scale.
Okay. Do all them, as well the alcohol-related offenses, get heard by the peer review board? And what percentage of these cases are alcohol, or what percentage of all total cases are alcohol-related, and what are the typical outcomes that, after the hearing?
Not all cases alcohol-related are heard by the peer review board. Anything that has to do with possession or consumption of alcohol goes to the JA. Anything that has to do with presence of alcohol, people who are not proven to be drinking alcohol or in possession of alcohol, that comes before the PRB. About 34% of our cases are alcohol-related. Of those, the findings would include sanctioning, which includes basics, essays or letters written on impact in the community, educational measures that we hope would help kind of alleviate some of those problems that potentially could arise in the residence halls.
Yeah, maybe this one, Bob. Do you know what percentage of alcohol violations go to the peer review board?
Of all alcohol violations? No. As of when I received the request to come here on Monday-ish, I didn't have time to pull together all the numbers for all of RP, but I have just the PRB numbers specifically, and we're working right now to get all the cases that go through the RHDs and regulatory programs, which would include the JA's numbers as well. So we're working on that.
Thank you. Representative Desai.
right. To answer your second question, we have very few repeat offenses. We only have about 1 to 2 per year for alcohol-related repeat offenses, and those are individuals, 1 or 2 individuals that are repeating. And we have about 45 cases per year that are alcohol-related, which may include anywhere between 3 to 10 people. So we have a very high success rate with educating and preventing reoccurrence. And the first question was... Right. We don't have numbers on it, but from experience, I'd say it's much easier for students to sneak in bottles of hard alcohol to their residence halls than beer. So most of the time, from my memory alone, I'd say that predominantly we have hard alcohol cases through PRB, but we do have beer as well.
Do you have any information on why, one, you don't have repeat offenses, two, what is the general trend for first-time offenses, thousands coming from the PRB board, how is it generally present with alcohol, and what occasions present with alcohol?
Most of the time, it'll be some sort of party or gathering in someone's room. They'll have alcohol out in the room. The RAs will be alerted to it because there's noise coming out, there's music being played. So that's kind of the situation that arises and how they come up for us. And when the RA goes in, they won't be able to decide, except for whose room it is. A lot of times there won't be any indication of who possessed the alcohol and who is actually consuming it. So that's when they don't know. That's when it comes to us. That's kind of how we get our cases. And, I mean, we just think that predominantly it's hard alcohol cases that are smaller gatherings in the rooms, maybe before going out for the night. Usually it's before going out for the night that students have these issues. They're roughly split, but we have slightly fewer cases in the fall and more in the spring. We had last year of the 44 cases that were alcohol related, we had 19 in the fall and 25 in the spring.
Vice President Ramsey.
Today we've never reached a limit that we couldn't handle. The way it works is we have two sessions of hearings per week, Tuesday and Thursday night, scheduled from 8 to 10. Normally our hearings, usually we have 2 or 3 per night per week, and they go till roughly 9 or 9:15. So we do have the capacity to nearly double the amount of cases we hear and still be successful in that. I couldn't comment really. I haven't thought about any expansions, but it's a possibility. But as of right now, we've never come up against a situation where we couldn't hear the number of cases in a week that we were required to hear.
Representative Smith. So we know that it's something that you have to safely
Right. So the house rules govern students' conduct while they're in a residence hall. So the vast majority of cases that we hear, the contact with alcohol happened while in the residence hall. The Green Judicial Board would hear cases where the chapters were in some sort of violation of a rule or code. But we would hear cases that come from contact in the residence halls. Normally when one student has alcohol and other students are in contact with through them.
Representative Jackson. I was wondering if you have any long-term trend statistics on the number of alcohol cases that have come before the Peer Review Board, you know, spanning back how long the board has existed, seeing if the number has increased or if it's stable or something flat, if there's a decrease.
We don't have statistics over the long-term for cases. I do know that last year, we had fewer overall cases than we had in previous years. So that might be an indication of the trend that you're asking for. But we don't at this point have, I don't have numbers for you in front of me for the long-term trends. There's something that we could get if we have a little more time.
Okay, so do you think, you know, in say a week or two time you could send over to us, you know, a couple of the numbers that, you know, if I sent you,
yeah, if you have any questions on statistics that have to do with PRB or residential programs over the last 7 years, we can get you some sort of numbers on that. Answer those questions.
Thank you, Representative. Good job. Thank you for coming here. So one of my questions is about statistics you just mentioned. Is there any way that we can get the internet as well as anyone else is interested in breakup of week by week in the number of cases we get? I know it looks like descriptions on the line of credit after which case is filed and here after some number of weeks. But if so, if we can get, you know, as I mentioned, week by week breakdown of the number of cases we get over the past 3 or 4 years.
So the residential programs resolution would essentially fall under the purview of the peer review board's residential programs. So, you feel free to ask that question, but it should be charged to our request for information should be down in that resolution.
And then to your knowledge, is there any way you think you can correlate that information with ISD information as far as open parties? Do you think that's possible given, you know, your experience with the case?
I know that we can get you numbers on we have records of all the cases with exact dates for when those incidents occurred for the last 7 years, so we can give you numbers on that.
And also jump in here. We can request that information on like when parties were located from the ISD they do technically fall in the student's office. So all these requests and also what not the assembly, I think we are going to hear from the office. So Representative Bajaj is the last person on our speakers list. Unless anybody else would like to ask a question, I'll just say that thank you for coming. We look forward to seeing the statistics. And we'll probably be comparing your statistics with statistics from other departments that we've requested. But we will be requesting like that for resolution today. I think it would be really interesting to determine trends, hopefully extrapolate something. So, if you'd like to support the office, feel free.
No, I'd just like to say we're happy to work with you on any goals that you want to accomplish, and just keep us in the loop, and we'll try to help you as much as possible.
All right, thank you very much.
First, Baja Money Group in
had reported from that meeting. Based on what the committee had recommended the group do last year, they're actually showing a lot of progress, and they've really reacted positively to a lot of the comments that the group that the appropriation committee. They're really considering in place on campus in the past, the problem is they replicate activities and programming that was done by other organizations on campus, like Save Tonight, which is late programming. So they're definitely doing a good job to kind of set their place on campus. But you know, the committee would argue that student union boards still need to do a little bit more with kind of figuring out that we're making sure that their programs aren't redundant and that they continue to attract members of students, which, you know, attendance numbers are still substantially lacking in a lot of the events. The student union board actually, when it co-sponsors with a lot of organizations, is able to bring larger crowds and attract students into the straight. So the committee has definitely suggested student union boards to look more into co-sponsorship as a method for bringing students into the straight, both with a high level of attendance as well as a high level of student union into the straight. But one concern is that turning the student union board into a funding board will be able to slow down the path to making them a SAC kind of organization and then with the instrument anyway. So there's going to be definitely a tightrope to walk there. But, you know, otherwise, I think that the group is definitely considered their position in the community, and we're going to be working with them over the course of this semester. Next week is MGLC and Cornell Concert Commission, so we'll keep you posted next week. Thanks, guys.
All right, moving to our
guys, so I'm actually going to introduce all four resolutions, R8, R9, R10, and R11, all at once. So essentially these are requests for information from different departments. So we have Gannett Health Services, which hears alcohol cases both from how many drinks students consume through their surveys, all the way to, I believe, medical transports, but I'm not 100% sure. We have the Judicial Administrator's Office to hear how many cases they hear per year. CU Police, how many tickets they write on campus. And then we have the City of Ithaca Police, so how many tickets they receive, they allocate to, not necessarily students, but people in College Town, and I think we can assume that most of them are going to be students. I'm also going to introduce R13 as well at this time, which is residential programs, so that's five resolutions. Because residential programs has all the cases on North Campus, on West Campus, and the dorms in College Town. And so it's furthering our objective analysis of trying to understand how these changes are going to affect students, all students, not only Greek life, because I don't think that's necessarily our main concern. Our main concern is how it's going to affect the students living on and off campus. So I know you all had a chance to review these for the past few days, so we're probably going to work through them one by one if you have any amendments, but that's my introduction of all four.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. I think actually that's a fine amendment. I don't know. I mean, some departments may not have that information, but. So I think this is a good amendment, and I urge the body to acclimate it. So I mean, currently it's not allocated by age. What we do have though is living location. So we're trying to figure. I mean, we assume they live on North, and I think that's probably more effective to understand than. Though that would be a worthy amendment if you want to make one. Again, we do have to think though of time constraints because we are requesting this information by October 1st. And the proposal to the trustees is at the end of October, I think the October 26th through 29th, or when the trustees are going to be on campus, something like that. But that being said, we can continue this review process even if the three bullet points get voted by the trustees, because I think this information is more useful when we analyze the implementation plan of those three bullet points. So if you'd like to make that amendment, feel free. But I think, you know, I'd be happy with that as well. But.
Thank you. Next on the list is Representative Saab. And if you have a second amendment.
I think I submitted it, and I don't. It should be there. If you don't see it, feel free to amend it back in. But I haven't taken anything out.
Yeah,
So would you? Would you?
Reports and stuff, but he also wanted to say that
So are the whereas clauses as well. I was thinking that it would be easier for the confidentiality to remain, for them to grant us access to that confidential information for fewer people. If you feel strongly about it, I'd be feel.
I'm just worried that a lot of the information were to be considered confidential, that we in December would be able to deliberate these issues and ultimately second for the privilege.
If you'd like to say the entire essay, I'd be perfectly fine with that. Make it voting members, because we don't want ex officio and all that voting members of the essay. That's fine. Yes. They meant that you don't vote. Okay, so by a vote of 18-0-0, R8, 9, 10, 11, and 13 pass. Thank you.
All right, moving on.
The next item on the agenda, Resolution 6, Responsibilities of the Vice President for Public Relations, Natalie Raps and Adam Gibbons.
We have like 20% to that in life.
All right, I'll give you 2 minutes just to reintroduce your resolution, describe any amendments you may have made, and vote on it. Moving to the speakers list, Representative Danzer.
So I spoke with the public representative today. Some of my comments from last week, I'm just always worried not to show that the assembly is moving forward. Things you don't want to happen, but are always possible that you consider
the amendment reads after approval by the executive board and the faculty advisor or someone of his or her choosing. All right. You're now on the amendment. Go ahead.
First of all,
All right. Anybody would like to add the speaker's list to? Representative Rao?
Quick question. Where's the third person who's been to co-sponsor this resolution? This is your meeting.
The first meeting was with religious students, and the second meeting was with the first
student. Okay. Fair enough.
He is here to bear it. And to tell you the truth, he did listen to the audio from the last meeting, and he said that it was that PG draft.
D.C. Nicoletti.
I have two questions. First, the last Airport Resolve Clause that you have to kind of communicate with Tom Bruce to get this approved, why can't we wait till he accepts kind of what the spirit of this is? What are his concerns? And I guess I'll let you answer and I'll bring my second one. And the other thing, I guess, kind of filling off Representative Danzer and kind of, D.C. Common Bruce's concerns is that assemblies in the future might take advantage of communication, and not to pick on anyone, but, you know, hear names like Dean Cassaro and even class councils who can really abuse their listserv and it gets forwarded to trash. And I hate to think that the student assembly knows that it gets forwarded to trash rather than not hearing about it. And so I really think that we should consider putting a limit on the amount of communication by, you know, number of emails per semester. I think that a number like two or three would be kind of something that we should consider putting into this resolution.
I
thought it was passed.
I apologize.
No, it's not passed. Okay. No, it's not passed. Okay, I'm sorry.
I don't want to put a number limit on it because I think we have a lot of different issues that we can
related to using a very white hand, but at the same time, why should we limit ourselves when we don't have a free hand?
All right, I'm going to cut you off here. Representative Brockman.
Yeah, I applaud this resolution. I think it's really good to put in our charter this responsibility.
Robin, one of the amendments, if you want to.
What? About the amendment.
Want to call the question?
What's the number? What's the number we're
on? Okay, hold on. The point of information I'm going to clarify here, we are still on the amendment of and the faculty advisor of the SA or a designee of his or her choice.
Okay. The problem
we have
is
open amendments.
I mean, this already exists. Ari, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, we already have a listserv that goes out to all students, and if someone were to check or send something, you would see it to check for appropriateness, stuff like that, before it would ever get sent out. It's already a system in place. And there. If someone sends something out to the 17,000 people that are on that list here, it would go to you before it would go to the 17,000 people.
Well, I'm not totally sure about some of the details that aren't quite down the works. There is no list right now. We do have a list that we need to update in the election, but that has added up to each election.
Well, she does a point of information, so you still have 1 minute.
So that list is separate from what you think they're proposing. You wouldn't want to use that list that already exists as the listserv? Okay. All right. Well, in the past, the way it works is that you go through the register. You come in front of the entire assembly, say you have a survey you want to send out to students or transfers or whatever, and the whole assembly approves it, and it's signed from the student assembly, and then you apply to the registrar's office, and the registrar within a couple weeks or sent it out. So I guess this is the creation of a new listserv or something, or in terms of the implementation of it.
All right, so I've been asked to prepare a presentation and speak about this. So basically, right now,
calling to question the amendment. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Call proclamation. Any dissent?
Yes.
Seeing none, we have adopted. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Go for it. You go ahead and explain your dissent. Do you actually? Yeah. Okay. Good. Explain your dissent to the amendment. If you would like to vote on the amendment. What?
Yeah, I just have to see the question.
Okay, so we'll go for a hand vote. So if you'd like to adopt the resolution or the amendment, please go ahead and stand up.
Is that a no? Oh, man.
14, yes. All right, please sit down. If you would like to reject the amendment, please stand up. 1, please sit down. If you'd like to abstain, please stand up.
Wait.
Smith, are you abstaining? Or do you know? Right. Seeing the votes of 14 to 1 for 1, the amendment passes. Now we're back onto the main motion. Speaker, Representative Stein.
Call the question.
Second. Please explain your dissent.
While I agree with the resolution and what it proposes, there is a slight mistake. Not so slight, but yeah. The last where I thought where it says coronavirus funded is blah, 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 blah. John Leibrand is Congress, he wrote it. These are not the sentiments of the Sun. It's the sentiments of one person that isn't censored by the Sun. So I motion to
disagree
that
whole part. So seeing as how that whereas clauses will not actually exist in the charter in any way, it doesn't actually affect the resolution, we're going to go ahead and vote to vote. So I'm not going to open the floor back up for debate. So if you'd like to vote on the resolution, please stand up.
Well, you don't want to vote for the resolution?
Wait. Wait, hold on. We need 2/3 to vote. Gitlin, do you... Okay, 8. We're voting to vote. All right, so we're opening back up the debate. Mr. Representative Golrajani.
All right.
Go ahead, repeat what you said.
All right.
All right, so we have... Can we assume it's a call for affirmation of the leading last word response? All right. All right, so I'm opening up the floor for any motions. Oh, John Rao is on the
floor. I just wanted to speak before we vote.
Okay, thank you. Please.
So, you know, I've thought about this a lot, and we have a lot of choice measures already in place for the student assembly. We have office hours for we had community talks about a year ago to try to get more people to come here and, you know, pay attention, take part, and keep coming and come out. Take a look around. There's no one in the audience. That's really good not at this time. But that's just interest to students coming other than, you know, maybe they're running for student assembly or covering it for an issue or something like that. We have press releases. We have the student assembly blog. We have the student assembly Facebook page. And pretty much all of these things...
45 seconds.
Students that care come here when they have an issue to discuss. We have a student assembly listserv that only 10 people have, 10 students have signed up for. My question is, why are we bothering students that really don't care?
30 seconds.
All right. So this is one of the things that you
there's been a motion that I'll give you 30 seconds.
And this is a publicity stuff. It's a trick to, you know, get people to know that we're doing. We genuinely want a community with two bodies. And for people on the high school, there's a lot of people who genuinely want to hear from the student body. And this is the most direct way in the 21st century that we can see.
There's still 10 seconds left.
Well, honestly, if you're going to email 13,000 students, just take 500 of the care, you're still bothering 12,500.
And that's time. Go ahead. Point of order, all right.
So, what we're voting on is whether there'll be an actual election.
So the election system is not affected at all by this resolution. This is purely to be able to send requests that we send emails to the student body. All right, what is your amendment? Please say your amendment. That's fine. Where would you like to place this amendment? In addition, all right. And then, so period from.
So after the amendment, we add.
Yeah.
Students will have the option to opt out of the. For the student, they'll be able to opt out of the email.
That's the question. Oh, that's already. Okay. Move you to opt out of the list if they so choose. All right, we are on the amendment. The floor is open for debate. Representative Brockman.
I think maybe if we include that in the charter itself, maybe we're getting a little too technical with the charter. Maybe that amendment would be better served in the latter be it therefore resolved clause. Not actually in the charter.
Hold on, please. So, where would you like to move the amendment?
That this resolution will come into effect after consultation with Vice President of Communications, Tom Bruce, and that this process will include an opt out option.
So moved.
When in effect.
That is point friendly, unless there's any dissent.
I think there should be an opt-in option, not an opt-out option.
All right.
We should start with 10.
We are now on the. So, you just. That was your privilege. Are there any motions on the floor for the amendment? No.
Call to question.
We have a call to question and a second.
Call for affirmation.
There's a call for affirmation.
Second.
Seeing none, the amendment has been adopted, and we are back to discussion on the main motion.
Call to question. Second.
Call to question. All right. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, if you would like to see R6 adopted to our charter, please stand up. Please sit down. If you'd like to vote no, please stand up. Please sit down. If you'd like to abstain, please stand up.
I'm off the chair, right?
The vote of 14-1-1, resolution 6 passes. Seeing as how the time is 6:32, unless there's any dissent, I will adjourn the meeting and we'll move our 12 to business of the day. Meeting adjourned.
Can I have your R6?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's the
question for you. And could you please see those emails that you need to send the amendments? What did I want to say? I want to say we need to sit down and send all these resolutions to everybody with the amendments.
With the amendments. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, to individual.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.